We are right in the middle of a five-week series in the letter of James. And often we think about the wisdom literature of the First Testament, the Old Testament, and it's probably easy to think of what books that might be. Proverbs has lots of wisdom in it. Ecclesiastes has lament and wisdom, and so does Psalms. But the wisdom literature of the Second Testament, lots of it is found in this letter to James, or letter written by James. And so what we've tried to bring out over the past couple of weeks and in the next couple of weeks with this wisdom literature is to help us to journey together as a people of lived theology, where we're not pontificating about our faith. Instead, we are trying to live it out in meaningful, touch the ground, make a difference for your neighbor kind of ways. We have the Spirit of God alive in us. And last week, Pastor Jeremy offered this picture for us of how to live the Jamesian way. He said, this isn't some sort of a life of perfection. It includes apologies, restoration, and confession. A lot of work and humility, with plenty of mistakes and missteps. Working out our faith in the real world is challenging and scary, and it is beautiful. Such a life of faith like this is good for the world and all its inhabitants. So that's the Jamesian way. And of course, chapter 3 of this letter seems to keep on building on that Jamesian way. This letter written by Jesus' brother, not addressed to specific church, but to scattered people and places, probably written to Jewish Christians or Gentile Christians who were trying to make their way of living this Christ is in you way in first century Mediterranean culture. And of course, this section has that surprising first line, a special word of caution to teachers, to help them to be mindful of their influence in these early congregations. But then James is quick to say, we're all in this together. And then he offers this earnest and honest statement for all believers. This is not to be a perfection game. It's not a prove how awesome and religious you are by having perfect Christian church attendance or by putting a Christian bumper sticker on your car. Instead, James simply states the reality of every human being, even as a Christ follower, is this. All of us make many mistakes. The word of the Lord? Thanks be to God. All of us make many mistakes. But James doesn't leave it there. He humbles us and maybe evens out the playing field for us. But this whole letter is kind of this poke and prod missive from James, where he pokes and prods and kind of puts lots of ouchy statements in there. But then he also very quickly says, but this is how you ought to live. And today's ought to live message is this pressing into the deeper topic of the tongue. James has talked about the tongue earlier in the letter. He said, beloved, let everyone be quick to listen, slow to speak. Beloved, let everyone be quick to listen, slow to speak. And then he adds, if any think they are religious and do not bridle their tongues, but deceive their hearts, their religion is worthless. And in chapter 3, he fleshes out more of this tongue taming. He marvels at this relatively small 5 or 6 ounce bit that brings control to the 900-pound horse. Amazing. Wally Brightcruise is here, and Sharon, you own horses. Is that amazing that this bit controls this 900 or 1,000-pound horse? And James also marvels at this idea of this little rudder that pushes the boat through storms and fury and chaos. And then he talks of the cosmic power that we're up against with the tongue. The tongue itself is lit on fire by hell. And the word that James used is Gehenna. And so for these first century hearers, Gehenna was this eternally burning garbage pit just south of Jerusalem. And so that would have been the image for these people, that the way that the powers that you're up against to control your tongue are powers far bigger than yourselves. Tongues start raging fire. Tongues have the potential of being empowered by cosmic forces of evil and principalities. And so we often then find ourselves, instead of being in places of life and growth and harvest, this little tongue of ours that has been untamed sends us to places of despair or desolation or dumpy burning garbage pits. James then adds to this bad news story that the tongue is untamable. The tongue is a restless evil full of death-dealing poison. And then he humbles us humans with stories from creation. He says creation's not double-minded and fickle. Creation lives with integrity and consistency. A spring gushes out either sweet or bitter water, not both at the same time. A saltwater lake produces salt water. It can't make fresh water. A fig tree, its destiny is producing figs. It can't produce an olive. And yet you people, you double-minded, forked-tongued people, are able to offer praise and cursing from the same mouth. You defy the natural course of creation. Ouchie, ouch, ouch, ouch. James, but what do you want us to do? James replies, this ought not to be so. So I hope the good news of today's story is that we have this calling to ought not and to be a people of ought. And on Back to Church Sunday, perhaps this is a great day and a great season to renew our call to be a people of the ought. And how I want to live that way out for us this week is to reflect on being a people of blessing versus cursing. Being a people of blessing instead of cursing. I often talk about blessing in marriage services, and I use the Henry Nouwen quote that says this. He says, to bless means to say good things. We have to bless one another constantly. Parents need to bless their children, children their parents, husbands their wives their husbands, friends their friends. In our society, so full of curses, we must fill each place we enter with our blessing. That sentence really sticks with me. In our society, so full of curses, we must fill each place we enter with our blessings. The goal is not perfection. We'll make many mistakes along the way. But can we pause, even in this sanctuary today, which I hope is a safe place for you? Can we pause and think about the places and the people we'll be amongst this week? Or maybe the headlines we'll see, or maybe some of the media feed that's going to come through our social media. And can we posture our hearts and our minds and our bodies and our souls for this posture of blessing? Can we be ready to say, I bless you, annoying coworker. I bless you, playground bully or workmate bully. I bless you, my enemy who seems to be working against me. I bless you, I bless you, I bless you. I bless you, family member who I stopped talking to 14 months ago. Ouchie, ouch, ouch, ouch. If you haven't read Barbara Brown Taylor's book, Altar in the World, some of our study groups in the church have done this book over the past couple of years. This is a book that gives 12 different practices And some of our small groups, I know, have taken up one practice per month and focused on that. So a great book if you're looking for something new or looking for some more spiritual formation ways of being a spiritual formation practicer in your faith. But one of her chapters is called The Practice of Pronouncing Blessings. And as I reread this chapter this week, I thought it might give us some more ideas for how we might live this way of blessing. She says, the next time you're in an airport, try blessing the people sitting at the departure gate with you. It doesn't have to be an airport. It could be the LRT. It could be a waiting room. Every one of them is dealing with something significant. See that mother trying to contain her explosive two-year-old? See that pock-faced boy with a huge belly? Even if you cannot know for sure what is going on with them, you can still give a care. They are on their way somewhere, the same way you are. They are between places too, with no more certainty than you about what will happen at the other end. Pronounce a silent blessing and pay attention to what happens in the air between you and that other person and all those other people. She goes on to say, such prayers of blessings are addressed to God, whose rain falls on the just and the unjust, whose sun rises on the evil and the good. In this complicated world, baby rattlesnakes get breakfast as well as baby girls and boys. Little Hitlers grow up in the same generation with little Bonhoeffers and little Schindlers. Blessing prayers do not overlook such complexity or the pain and suffering that can accompany it. Rightly or not, they decide that given a choice between a blessing and a curse, a blessing will do more to improve air quality. And again, I thought as we imagine those places we are going to be this week and posturing our hearts and our minds and our mouths for blessing, I thought we could start it right here. Maybe you could turn to the left or turn to the right. Look around you, and you don't need to audibly say this, but will you look to someone near you and silently pray a blessing for them? Let's look around this place and pray a blessing. You might know the story of that person next to you, and you might know specific ways you can pray a blessing for them, but they might be a stranger next to you this morning. But look at them and pronounce a blessing on them, praying that they would know this way of peace, this way of shalom, this way of healing, this way of compassion, this way of care that we talk about as a people who follow Jesus for the good of the world. In our society, so full of curses, we must fill each place we enter with our blessings. And I'll close with the prayer of the psalmist who helps us in this journey. May the words of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable to you, our Lord, our Rock, and our Redeemer.